Today is October 11, 2019, and on behalf of SABRE, the Society of American Baseball Research, we are interviewing Mr. Frank Thomas for our oral history project. My name is Steve Jaremko, and I'm visiting with Mr. Thomas at his home in Pittsburgh. By way of introduction, Mr. Thomas was one of the outstanding right-handed sluggers of the 1950s and 60s. He played in the big leagues for 16 years as an outfielder, third baseman, and first baseman. Mr. Thomas began his career with the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1951. Beginning in 1959, he played for a succession of teams, the Cincinnati Reds, Chicago Cubs, Milwaukee Braves, New York Mets, Philadelphia Phillies, Houston Astros, Milwaukee Braves, and finished with the Chicago Cubs in 1966. After Ralph Kiner was traded to the Chicago Cubs in 1953, Mr. Thomas became the Pirates' top slugger. Mr. Thomas also became the first top slugger for the New York Mets when he joined the team for their inaugural season in 1962. Mr. Thomas is a three-time All-Star. Over his career, Mr. Thomas amassed 1,671 hits with 286 home runs, with a lifetime average of .266 and a slugging percentage of .454. Welcome, Frank Thomas, to the SABRE Oral History Project.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I'd like to go over some questions about your early life, and we're going to start with, what was your given name at birth?
Frank J. Thomas.
Where and when
it's
were
actually
you...
Francis, you know, but Francis is a Frank. You didn't know that, did you? Okay. Are you Polish?
Oh, Ukrainian.
Ukrainian. Well, you should have known that. Because that's all, you know, my mother was Slavish, my dad was Lithuanian. And... you know, they baptize you as Francis, but Frank's the middle name, you know, the regular name for Francis.
Where and when were you born?
Here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And what was the date of your birth?
June 11th, 1929.
Tell us a little bit about your parents, their names, and what did they do?
My mother was Anna Pavlik before she got married. My dad's name was Bronislaus Tumas. He was 15 years old when he boarded a ship, okay, snuck on the ship to come over to this country. And when he got to Ellis Island, they says, Thomas? He says, yes. So that's why he got the name of Thomas. That's why I got the name of Thomas, but it was Tumas, T-U-M-A-S.
And what kind of work did your parents do?
My mother worked at the laundry department where my dad was the foreman in McGee Hospital in the laundry department.
Yeah, my mother was a nurse and she worked at McGee Hospital for a time.
Okay.
Did you have siblings? Brother and sister?
I have an older sister deceased, and I got a brother and sister twins.
Are they still with us?
They're both still living.
What area of Pittsburgh did you live in?
I lived right in Oakland, 5-10 minute walk from Forest Field.
What was your neighborhood like at that time?
Neighborhood was fine. You know, we used to play on the street. No one bothered us. Now you can't even do that because you might get shot.
What sports did you play as a youngster?
I played all sports. Played football, basketball, hockey, baseball.
How did you get started with baseball?
My Uncle Mike had me outside throwing a baseball when I was 5 years old.
So did you play in anything like, did you play sandlot ball, American Legion, or anything like that?
Sandlot ball. First of all, I went to a seminary at Mount Carmel College in Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada. That was my high school days. I went there 4.5 years, and sports was so predominant in my life that I had to get out. In fact, Jack Butler played for the Steelers, and I were both in the same class. He became a professional football player. I became a professional basketball and baseball player in the same class.
Was that an easy decision for you to make at that time?
Oh, yes. Very easy.
When you were a youngster like that and as a teenager, what positions did you play then?
Well, you know, I played more fast pitch softball, okay, and I played shortstop without a glove because mother and dad couldn't afford a glove. So that's the reason why I dare Major League Baseball players, pitchers, and everybody throw the ball as fast as they can, and I'll catch it barehand.
Let me ask you, did your folks, did they understand baseball? Did they follow baseball?
My dad says, you're not going to go into baseball. You don't make any money here. I mean, he was true when he said that about making any money. Today, I mean, it'd be a different story.
Did you have any U.S. military service?
No. That's funny because I was down at the train station, ready to go. And John Cromer said, you're not going. I said, what do you mean I'm not going? I said, I'm going to close. He said, your wife's pregnant. And I didn't have to go.
At that time, did you have any favorite major league players?
No.
How were you scouted for professional baseball?
I have no idea. In other words, I played for the Little Pirates with George Fields and Billy Nixon.
Okay. What was the Little Pirates? Is that a town
team? It was sponsored by the Pittsburgh Club. And I used to play 75 games during the summer. Okay.
Where did you play games?
All over. Played in Fineview, all around Pittsburgh, even down in West Virginia. Place like that.
So at the time, they had the bonus baby wasn't in place, was it?
No.
No.
So when you got signed, you were almost like a free agent. I mean, you could go to any club you wanted to go to. I mean, Cleveland was after me. I wish the Red Sox would have been after me, because I'd have probably went there. But I decided I wanted to play in my hometown. But if I had to do it over again, I wouldn't do that. You're never honored in your hometown.
Well, there's a lot of folks that still honor you, I think. In your professional career, I have it as July 23rd, 1947, that you were signed by the Pirates as an amateur free agent. So at the time, you said you had offers from Cleveland as well.
I had offers from Cleveland. But Father Moriarty from Pittsburgh, from St. Agnes Church, where I belong, he called Roy Amy and he says, we want him to stay in Pittsburgh so we can see him play.
Oh, so you had a lot of fans here.
Yeah, but like I say, if you're a home run hitter in any ballpark and you're playing in your hometown, people expect the impossible. They think you're supposed to hit a home run every time you come to bat. And it's only proven you're only going to hit maybe one out of every 11 times at bat. And it's tough playing in your hometown. But it's good because you're playing half the season in your hometown. I mean, when I left Pittsburgh, the only time I saw my family was when I came to Pittsburgh, the club I was playing for.
Well, did your family always attend your games when you played here?
Well, a lot of times, right. Absolutely.
So when you first entered the professional career, I have you as in the 1948 Tallahassee Pirates down in Florida.
Tallahassee, Florida.
And do you have any thoughts about when you first went down? Was that you had been away in seminary school, so you had been away from home?
Well, I was flying from, I forget where I was flying from, I was in spring training, I guess, someplace. And I was flying to Tallahassee, Florida, and I went through a hurricane. And I didn't eat anything before I went on a plane. That's the worst thing you can do, as I found out later. And scared as hell, pardon that language, but I got to Tallahassee, Florida, and I had a manager there by the name of Jack Rothrock from the St. Louis Gashouse gang. Great manager, great person. In fact, when I went to spring training in California, we stayed at his house with his wife. Okay, my wife did the cooking, and he said to me, you cannot get to the major leagues walking. You leave the bench swinging. And that stayed in the back of my mind of my whole career. I never struck out 100 times a season. And you can't say this to people today. I struck out 200 times. Okay? There's more strikeouts than there are hits. And when you put the ball in play, something always can happen. Now you can fumble it. You can throw the ball wild. Two runners can come together, two outfielders can come together. There's so many different avenues that can happen. And what he taught me was the right thing.
When you started, you were starting as an outfielder?
Yes.
And then in 49, you played for three teams, and all still in the Pirates organization. The Tallahassee Pirates, that was Class D.
Right.
And you always showed a lot of long ball potential in all the things you played. You were in with the Waco Pirates in Pass B.
I was in 352 with Waco, and they said, you're going back to Tallahassee. And the manager before used to say, Buddy Hankin said that, you know, every boy should have that desire to go higher. If he started out in D, go to C, go to B, or maybe skipped C and go to B, and maybe skipped A and go to double A, okay? And the next day, he pulled me aside after the meeting, and he said, you're going back to Tallahassee. I said, after what you just said, I'm going back to Tallahassee? I said, I'm going home. At that time, I almost decided to go back home and forget about baseball. Because I said, if this is the way baseball is going to be, I don't want to have any parts of it. But at the time, my girlfriend, okay, not the one now, but the one before, you know, my wife passed away 7 years ago, but she was my girlfriend back then. She says, you love baseball too much. She says, go back. And I did. Okay, and I guess it was the best advice I could get.
So then you also played in Iowa for the Davenport Pirates that year.
Davenport, Iowa. Not very long.
Right. So in those seasons, then you were, it seemed like ball players were really, they were seasoned. By the time they hit the major leagues, they had played already like 5 years of minor league ball.
Absolutely.
And that's something that's not done today. But in 1950, you went on to play for two teams, the Charleston Rebels.
Right.
And the New Orleans Pelicans, which right. was the Class B team for, these were all still in the Pirates.
Double A.
Organization. Oh, that was double A.
A
okay.
was Charleston, New Orleans was double A.
And I want to ask you about your Pelicans manager at that time, Rip Sewell.
Yes.
Do you have any memories or recollections of Rip Sewell?
Rip Sewell was the only Pirate player. I used to, you know, at Forbes Field, after the ball game, I'd get down and wait for him to come out and try to get an autograph. Rip Sewell was the only one that come out, put his arm around me, walked all the way up the street with me, saw my pants were tore. He says, what happened? I says, I've been out playing ball. He says, good for you, kid. I played for him. He even mentioned me in his book, okay? And great guy. I've had some great managers in my career, and I can't complain. I would have to pick the best one was Danny Murtaugh.
And we'll be talking about Danny in a little bit. Now, the teammates that you had with you on the Pelicans at that time was Vern Law and Bob Perkey.
Right, right.
And they went on to good careers.
Yeah, Perkey was godfather to my oldest son, and Maz is godfather to my second oldest son.
I went to school with Bob Perkey's son. He died early.
Yeah, he died out in Colorado. In other words,
yeah, he was in my graduating class. I knew him pretty well.
Never knew he had what he had underwater and never come back.
So in the 51, you stayed with the Pelicans, and you had a pretty good year there too. You had 23 home runs. It was enough to get you up to the club that year, and your first experience for the 1951 Pirates.
Right.
And at that time, tell me, what can you recall about your first major league game?
First major league game was against the Cubs. I think that's what it was. Paul Minor was a pitcher. I got my first hit off Paul Minor, and I hit him. I had 10 straight hits against him in one stretch. And we're in Forest Field playing against him later on in my career. Got the count 3-2 and threw behind me, hit him back in my leg. And he's laughing the whole time I'm going down to first. Said, that's one time I got you. But no matter what I did, all I had to do was swing the bat against Minner. Shortstop and second baseman would come together. Two outfielders would come together. Okay, I had 10 straight hits off of him. It was amazing that something like that can happen. But he was a great guy, you know. And then he took everything in stride, and I've talked many times with him and stuff like that.
Well, you had a really great beginning to your career,
yes,
I think.
Yes. The first game, well, I was playing center field. Kiner was in left. Ball hit in left center. He says, go get it, kid. but Ralph and I became pretty good pretty good buddies.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about some of the folks that you played with during that team. So we had Ralph Kiner. So what are your recollections on Mr. Kiner?
Ralph always talked to me and he says, watch the way they pitch me, because that's the way they're going to be pitching you the same way.
And where did you fit in the lineup with Ralph and
after him? After him, yeah.
So he batted in the fourth place and you were fifth.
Right.
So
I didn't have anybody following me when I played for the Padres, except maybe Dale Long at one time.
Well, the other some of the other players that you were with at that time, and I'm just going to throw some names out there and give me your thoughts. Gus Bell, George Metkovich, Rocky Nelson, Lolly Westlake, Murray Dixon.
I didn't play with Rocky Nelson. I played with Dixon, pitcher, great guy. Metkovich, very nice man, okay.
And Danny Murtaugh was playing.
And I played, and he was with us in New York also with the Mets. And the first one that you made?
Gus Bell.
Gus Bell, yeah. Well, Gus was very good friends. In fact, my wife was diapered his baby at the ballpark.
Is that Buddy Bell?
No.
Nope.
Yeah, Buddy's the oldest one.
Yeah,
right?
Buddy, yeah.
I tease him every time I see him. I said, my wife knows what. Yeah, most of the players in my era are great guys. I mean, I don't know of any of those players that would refuse to sign an autograph for a kid. It's a different ball game today when they pass the kids by. It's a shame.
So you were sent back to the Pelicans in 52.
Right.
And you, for what, more seasoning? They wanted you to, did they tell you why they wanted you to go back?
They never tell you anything. They just do what they want to do. You got no choice.
And Danny Murtaugh was managing the Pelicans at that point. He had been a player manager, or player, second baseman, I guess.
One game, playing left field, I misjudged the ball. He said, you got left field so screwed up. He said, and all grass and everything is ruined. I said, Danny, I says, you're too old to be playing anymore. But he was a great guy. I'd say he spit the back all over everybody.
So when you went, looks like you went back to the Pirates in 52, and that was a really terrible year for the Pirates, and they were...
Well, I almost didn't go back. I mean, I was so mad that they didn't pick me up earlier, okay? But as it turned out, you know, everything worked out. And you said 16 years in major, I had 16 and a half years in the major leagues. So, you know, towards my pension.
Now, the manager of the Pirates that time was Billy Meyer. Oh. Do you have any thoughts or recollections on him?
Not very much. I mean, you know, he was an older manager, and me being a young kid, you know, you're sitting back and you really don't want to say anything, you know, in that respect, because you want to have respect for the manager.
Well, in 52, you also, who were also teammates besides Ralph Kiner at that time, was Dick Rote, Joe Garagiola, and Bob Friend. So do you have any thoughts on those, you fellas?
Well, Garagiola took me on my first speaking engagement. And I'm sitting there and I said, what should I talk about? He says, Frank, he says, just tell them all about your career, because that's what they want to hear. And that was it. And then later on in my life, you know, I come up with different things to talk about. And pretty good speaker on the you know, speaker
round. You do enjoy public speaking?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Dick Rote?
You know, Dick was a type of ball player. He wasn't fast, okay, and he knew that. Great right field hitter, okay. Ball inside, just go to the right field constantly. And he'd always know where the ball was going to be hit, because we used to have meetings and they said, this is where we're going to pitch this guy. So he played the percentages, okay? And if he was a pull hitter, he'd move more towards third base. Or if he wasn't a pull hitter and straight pull hitter, he'd just stay in his position. But he was a good infielder. Okay, and him and Maz were a good combination.
Well, you mentioned the meetings. Do they always have, when you started a series with any team, had a team meeting?
We did. I don't know whether they do today or not, because they have everything on computer today. I mean, they have everything, if you're a hitter, they have you whether how many balls you hit the right field, how many hit the right center, how many hit the dead center, how many hit the left center, how many hit the left field, how many hit down the line. They have all that computerized. That's why the last three innings of a ball game takes more than the first six innings today. And they want to speed up the game. But they've changed pitchers back and forth. And I always said, you know, they say to the kids today, throw as hard as you can. Give me six strong innings. We'll bring in the long man. Then we'll bring in the short man. Then we'll bring in the closer. Now, the short man should be the closer because he's facing the meat of the batting order. The closer is facing the last three batters of the ball game. Mm-hmm. My opinion. But they won't think of my opinion.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of people who agree with that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
A lot of people. Bob Friend.
Bob Friend, yeah, he just passed away.
February.
When he won 22 games, I won 10 of them with home runs for him. Okay? He was the pitcher that, I'm in the outfield. I mean, 3-2 behind every hitter. 3-2 behind every hitter. Okay? Pitched strong arm. Okay? Pitched a lot of innings, over 200 innings every game, every year. And a great, great competitor. Okay? And we were great friends. Great friends. And I mean, sorry to hear it. I mean, I just saw him at Christmas time, and then 2 months later, he's gone. But you never know. There are 75 ex-Major League ballplayers right now that are 80 years and older. Pretty good genes. So when the buzzer starts ticking, they're going to go like flies.
Well, in 53, you really came into your own.
Right.
And then there was a manager, Fred Haney, that was the new manager for the Pirates.
Because of him, I got my start. Every spring training, I'd hit 9-10 home runs. I go north, they don't play me. He says to Ricky, he says, I want this kid to play. So he said to me, he says, you're my center fielder. Okay? He says, it's either you doing the job and making it, or you don't. And it was like taking a blanket off you and sending you out to pasture. Always take somebody to give you that break.
Well, you had that year. You had a great year. Hit 30 home runs.
Oh.
Batted in 102, and you were in the most valuable player voting that time. You got an 18th place vote,
right.
And it was a great year for a young fella. You were only 24 years old.
Right, and that record still stands. 30 home runs a first year man since 1953. It's a long time.
Yes. Some of the other players at that time, that you have any thoughts of? Danny O'Connell, Johnny O'Brien, and Eddie O'Brien.
Well, the O'Brien twins was something. You know, you didn't know which one was going to pitch, which one was going to play the infield, or you don't know which one was going to bat for each other.
Did they both pitch?
No, yeah. Just Eddie pitched.
Just Eddie.
Yeah. They were great guys. You know, Danny O'Connell was, you know, a sweet little Irishman.
Well, in 54, the Pirates, they really were starting to put together their core of a nucleus of a really good team. And Haney was still manager. Branch Rickey, of course, was GM, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. You had your first All-Star game that year. It was in 54. And again, you were nominated for Most Valuable Player with 13th place votes. And then that year,
I should have been in the All-Star game in 53. But they had so many different great outfielders, you know.
Well, in 54, you hit for a .298 average, 23 home runs, 94 RBIs. Again, really a very solid year. And in that year, also, you started to see some of the players that came up were Bob Skinner and Jerry Lynch, Vernon Law had already been there, but I just wanted to talk about him at this point.
Well, Vern was my roommate with Pittsburgh, you know, one time, you know, because he switched it around all the time. Vern, great guy, still a great guy. He's 89 years old. He still pitches batter practice.
That is awesome. Yeah. Do you still talk to him?
Well, I see him at the golf tournaments. He come in for Maz's tournament, and he come in for some other thing that I saw him too. He's got a big family, big family.
He's got like 31 great grandchildren or something. Bob Skinner, any thoughts on Bob Skinner?
Well, Bob was a good left-hand hitter, okay, and not the great outfielder that you'd want to have, but he was adequate, did the job, and they put him in left field and brought me in third base. Thought that if they did that our ball club would be much stronger, and probably was.
Tell us about your transition from outfield to third base. What was that like for you?
As long as I can play, I don't care where I play. Give me my four or five times at bat.
Well, so far as getting extra infield practice and things like that, they work with them.
I used to take 150, 200 ground balls a day. Same way in the outfield. When I'm spring training, I take an awful lot of fly balls, ground balls, line drives, and stuff like that. By doing that, you make yourself a good ball player.
Well, you could play just about any position.
Right. I played first base, okay, and I played second base when I had the bun on, okay, and I had good hands. And most of my errors at third base were throwing errors, and my ball would take off like I was throwing from the outfield.
Which position do you think you felt like you were the best at? I knew you played all of them well,
I come as a center fielder because I had a great arm. And nobody ran on me, nobody ran on Clemente, nobody ran on when we got Verdon, okay. I moved over to left field, okay, and then that's when they put Skinner in, moved me into third base to make the ball club stronger. But I enjoyed just playing the game of baseball. And I think it's the greatest sport that there is. I don't like what they're doing with it. I just feel that they're... it's all greedy, making money, how they make it, stuff like that. You got kids that are playing up here that are hitting 190, making millions of dollars, and that's not fair to the kid. You don't give them a chance. Hurdle here, he just won't give the kids a chance to come to work out of a jam, okay? The one guy, seventh inning, he gave up two hits. Okay, first two men got on base, he yanked them. Didn't even give him a chance. And to me, that's wrong. And another thing I hate about baseball is, let's say you're on the disabled list. Okay? You're the starter, you're on the disabled list. You're on it for 6 weeks. The kid that you put in there, going great. You come back, you're in the lineup, it sits on the bench. I'm a manager. That didn't happen. I don't care what the front office says to me. They'll have to fire me if I'm a manager. I'm going to let that kid work his way out of the lineup and let this other guy sit until he works his way out of the lineup. My opinion.
Okay. In 1955... again, another great year you had. Batting average dipped a little, but you still had 25 home runs, 72 RBIs. You were again selected for the All-Star team. And then again, for most valuable player in the voting, you were in 23rd place. But again, another really solid year. And I wanted to ask you at this point, what kind of work did you do in the offseason? I know that at the time, ball players didn't make the kind of money you make today. So how did you support your family during that time?
Worked in a mill, emptied boxcars with 100-pound sacks of cement and manganese. Never realized how big boxcars were. I worked in a stump crew for the city. And that's probably why I had the great year in 58, because after the 54 season, after the 52nd season, I was doing that right. And, swing of the axe for the stump crew. It was like swinging at the bat. And I did everything, okay? And whatever I could possibly do to, and go out and, make some speeches and stuff like that But I mean, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but you know my first matron, my first salary in spring training was in minor leagues? $150 a month, which was $750 for the season. Okay? Paid my room and my board and come home with $900.
What kind of, did they have meal allowances then too?
$2 a day.
People says, all you can eat on $2
yeah,
a day.
Oh, you go to White, you go to White Castle, get 12 hamburgers for a dollar. But anyway, and you come home with $900. And people say, how can you come home with $900? Well, in the minor leagues, you have a lot of fun in the minor leagues because families are closer together. Minor, major leagues, the only time you see the players is at the ballpark and they're gone. But if you hit a home run in the minor leagues, they pass the hat around to the stands. Okay, they bring the money in, they dump it on a table, the clubhouse guy writes the charts off for all the players, the 18 players that are in, on the roster, or 18, 21 players, okay, and then you got the rest. That's why I come home with $900. My first major league contract, 1951, $5,000.
What do you, they get that for playing 5 minutes now.
1 minute. It's all the different ballgame today.
So one of the questions I had was, how do you keep in shape during the year? But you explained that, all those jobs that you did in the
well,
offseason.
I worked out. I used to go up to Pitt Stadium and run, take batting practice, stuff like that. So.
Now at this time, because of you, you've put together some great years in succession. Really a solid, outstanding ball player.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about dealing with Ranch Rickey and trying to...
I prefer not to even talk to him about the man.
Well, let's just say for the record that he was a tough negotiator with the puck players. And
I'm not going to say anything about the man. I just didn't like him. And I have my reasons for it.
Okay, we'll move on then, because the next year, then, in 55, Clemente joined the team.
Right.
And you also have Dale Long, who you mentioned
right,
earlier,
right.
And Gene Freese, Roman Mejas, Ron Klein, and Elroy Face.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about Clemente, if you will.
Clemente was a great ball player, okay? But as a ball player, he did things that ball players didn't like. Number one, if I'm playing first base, man on second base, opposing team, ball hit the right field. Guy's trying to score. Clemente throws the ball over my head. If we don't get the guy at home, the guy who hit the ball ends up second base. Fans don't see that.
No, he didn't hit the cutoff.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And if fans don't see that, they think, well, he's got a great arm, which he did have. Okay, I mean, you know, he saved some ball games for us and stuff like that, but he lost some ball games too. But outside of that, he was a good humanitarian. Okay. Loved kids, did things for kids, stuff like that. But that's the only bad thing that I could say about him. It's just baseball, my theory of doing the right thing when you're playing baseball. It's not, downgrading him or anything like that. Yeah.
Did you see him change over the years as you played, or as
he
played?
Yeah, he became a better hitter, okay.
He's chased a lot of bad balls, as I recall. Watching him play.
No, if you, when I left Pittsburgh, and I would face the Pirates, and I would tell my pitchers, pitch Clemente right down the middle. You throw him outside, he's going to kill you. You throw him inside, he's going to kill you. But many times, the ball right down the middle, and he pops it up. Fantastic the way things happen in baseball. You never realize that things could happen. In 162 games, and how many times you go to bat.
So, Dale Long.
Dale Long and I were great teammates, okay? In New Orleans, we were great teammates. I hit 35 home runs, he hit 33. We were fighting for the title, okay? But we were great. And I went to see him in his deathbed. I went to his memorial. You don't see that today. That's what's bad about baseball. You know, all the players that you played with and played against, and something happens to them, you never know. And I try, I'm in touch with some ballplayers, in touch with Eddie Crane Poole, Ron Hunt from the Mets, okay, and Ron has his problem now with Parkinson's. Crane Poole has his problems with diabetes. He had his toes taken off, and then he had a kidney transplant in March, which worked out pretty good. But it's sad. It's really sad.
And diabetes is tough. I have it as well, and it's something you have to be careful of.
Absolutely.
And I remember reading about Rip Sewell. He lost both his legs from diabetes.
I think Lou Brock, too. Yeah, Lou Brock lost his leg.
How about Elroy Face?
Elroy. One thing you can say about Elroy, when he came in the pitch, he knew he was throwing strikes. He didn't waste time, okay? And he had a rubber arm. All he had to do was throw five or six pitches in the bullpen and he was ready to go. And he's a great, great little golfer right now. I mean, he's 91 years old. He'll be 92 in February. And him and I are pretty good friends. I send him a birthday card every year. See him at different golf courses, but you know, I think my golf days might be over because my shoulders give me trouble now.
Ron Klein, he was from nearby Calgary, PA.
Ron is a good fastball pitcher. Okay, but you know, when in the major leagues, especially in the National League, you can't continue to throw fastballs. You have to mix it up. Because after the third inning, they catch up to that fastball. But he became a better pitcher after Pittsburgh threw a knuckleball when he went to Washington.
Yeah, he was pretty good with the Twins, too. Right. He came back. He came back to the Pirates in 69,
right.
I think.
Right.
Gene Freese.
Gene was crazy. Him and his brother, you know, bro. The difference between the two of them, I mean, it's so much different like anything. Competitor, okay, said what he wanted to say, didn't care what he said, he just told the truth. And I like people like that.
So now in 56, again, you put together another solid year, 25 home runs, 80 RBIs, 282 average. Now you had a new manager, Danny Murtaugh, and Joel Brown had replaced Brian Tricky as GM.
Well, I played for Joe at New Orleans. He was general manager down there. Okay, and he always used to tell me, he says, if I can make a good trade, I trade my mother for that trade. When I got traded, he never told me. I was in Europe with Joe Graggiola, Nestor Shylock, Early Wynn, at a clinic for the Air Force. 7 o'clock in the morning, phone rang, radio man, Frank Thomas. I said, yeah. He says, how do you feel about being traded? I said, who was I traded to? He says, Cincinnati. I says, for whom? He says, Hoke, Haddix, and Burgess. But then there were some other players from the Pittsburgh, Grammy Douglas, Johnny Powers, and
Jim Pendleton.
Jim Pendleton. And that's how I found out that I was traded. And to this day, I mean, he's passed away. To this day, I would never forgive him for that because I asked him to let me know first so I knew how to handle the media. Joe Graggiola said, put your hand on the phone. He said, don't burn your bridges behind you, which was very good advice. But it was...
Did you ever talk to Joe Brown at all after that?
I never talked to him. And then the funny part about it, Gabe Paul from Cincinnati called me in Germany, you know, and why Joe Brown wouldn't honor what he said, you know. General managers are, I have only used for one that I played for, and that was the guy from Chicago.
John Holland. John Holland?
No, it wasn't no? Holland.
Oh, that's who I had, John Holland. Maybe that's not correct.
I'm not sure who it was. Anyway, you know, you could talk to him, and he would listen to you. And after he listened to you, then he would say, you know, you're right, and I'm wrong. And he's the only one that's ever done that for me, okay? And I respected him for it. Yeah, I guess it was John Holland, yeah. I guess it was.
In 56, the manager was Bobby Bragan. Have any thoughts about playing for Bobby Bragan?
I enjoyed playing for him. A lot of people say he was crazy, but I'll tell you one thing. I had a great year for him, okay? He asked me to come and play third base, and I said at a breakfast. You know, I was at the table over here, and he's over here, and he's talking loud enough with the coaches and stuff. And he says, you know, if Thomas moves in and play third base, we'd be a stronger ball club. I looked at him, I said, you want me to play third? I said, put me in third base. I said, I'll play anywhere you want, as long as I got my five times at bat. I said, I'll play anywhere you want. I love the game.
What made you so versatile? I mean, yeah, you were able to play all those positions.
Well, you know, that's the type of player I am. I mean, I love the game, and I give 110%. But getting back to errors with Murtaugh, when I was playing third base, and Murtaugh, I threw a ball to Dale Long at first base, and the ball in Milwaukee, and the ball took off. I don't know whether you've ever seen the Milwaukee Stadium. Here, and there's another level. Well, the ball went up to the next level. I come into the dugout, Murtaugh says, that's enough of that. But I've had a lot of fun in the game. I mean, I've enjoyed it. You know, it's my boyhood dream, and how many times did people ever get to do what their dream was that came true. And I'm very fortunate. But you've always been good to me. And,
to be a major leaguer is such a rare. Look at all the people that try to play the game and those that get to the majors. My gosh.
Right.
Now, during 56, there were two other players that joined the team during that time, and I wanted to get your opinions on them. Bill Mazeroski and Bill Verdon.
Well, Maz, I remember he joined us in Cincinnati, and he was standing outside the wall, and I went over and I introduced myself. And to me, he is the greatest second baseman that I've ever played with. Okay? And I say this for this reason. When I come in to play third base, and for a double play ball, ball hit to me, to him, to first, I don't think the ball ever hit his glove. Okay? That was that quick. I didn't realize it until I played first. And I noticed, and I says, it's very true. He just slipped it right off the thing. Great hands. And Verdon made him a great hit, a great outfielder. Because every time we used to go to St. Louis, I used to see him taking ground balls from right field. You know, the coach would be hitting ground balls to him to center field and hitting line drives to him, hitting fly balls to him. He made himself a great outfielder. When he came to play center field, I moved over to the left. We had three of the strongest arms in baseball. Nobody ran on us. I mean, I threw three guys out against the Dodgers in one game. You know, two, a third, and one at home. And after that, it got to a point where they're not going to run on you like they do today. Because if you have a great arm today and you fumble the ball, they're not going to run if you're throwing too many great men out, like Marte, okay? But there's not too many great arms today.
You know, Bob Prince was the announcer for the Pirates in those days. He had nicknames for everybody.
Yeah, you know one thing about him? Never said a bad word about any ball player. No matter what the ball player did, he never said a bad word about him. Great guy. Today, these announcers today, they say things that it shouldn't be said, okay? But they do. They do that the same way with writers. Okay, when I played in New York, I knew which writers I could talk to and say off the record and would never print anything. But the other ones that you talk to, they print it right away because they want to make a name for himself. I went to New York on June 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. Okay, I only knew one writer there. And they have a millionaire there. And that's why I say the Hall of Fame is nothing but popularity contest, because, you know, my credentials are better than the bottom 40% of the Hall of Fame, but that's not going to get me a Hall of Fame for a simple reason, because there's not enough votes. But I don't care. I mean, I have my own Hall of Fame. I mean, I'll show you it in the back room after we're finished.
We were talking about nicknames. Bob Prince had a nickname for everybody.
Right.
And for instance, Bill Verdon was the Quail, mm-hmm. and Don Hoke later was the Tiger, right. and Clemente was the Reba. Did he have one for you?
Yeah, a big donkey. And the reason for it, because I was probably one of the biggest men in baseball then, tallest men, but not very fast. Okay. But once I got started, I was fast. I mean, I can score from first to home on a double from, you know, somebody hitting a double. But it took me a while to get started. So I understood that.
Now, did that nickname stick with you for all the teams you went through for your career?
People would. I still get letters from fans, you know, which put down the big donkey. I put it down. So I'm proud of it.
Do you get lots of requests for people to sign baseball cards and pitchers? And
I'm out of baseball 53 years. I still get anywhere from 8 to 10 letters a week. And the reason for it is I was good to kids. Those kids have grown up.
Yeah.
Those kids have grown up, all right? And now their kids are starting to send me stuff.
There's a really wonderful photo I found in here. I wanted to show it to you. But I think this one here.
That one's in New York.
This photo of you as a Met, and that picture, you know, to me that was like, wow, that kid was so happy to get your signature.
Well, they had one like that in Cincinnati, too.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, so we're in 1957. And now Danny Murtaugh is the manager of the Pirates. So you played for Danny for 2 years. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about Danny Murtaugh.
I remember Danny when he was in New Orleans, okay? And we had gone on a pretty good winning streak. And all of a sudden, we went on a bad streak. And we're in the shower. And I said to him, Danny, why? Tell me why. We went so great, and now all of a sudden, we're in a tailspin. And his answer to me, he says, because you didn't hustle. I looked at him. I said, Danny, if I didn't hustle, then why didn't you take me out of the lineup? He was kind of mad when he said that. And after he got out of the shower, he came back over and he says, I didn't mean that. He said, because you give me 110%. He apologized. But playing for him in the major leagues, okay, he's a type of manager, and this is why I like him. If you do something great, he pats you on the back. And you do something bad, you kick in a fanny. And I think that's the way baseball should be. Managers should be. They shouldn't be the type of manager like Hurdle wanted to be. He wanted all the players to like him. Okay, if you want to win, you can't do that. You play your 8 best players plus your pitcher, all right? And if something happens to one of your regulars, then you fill in with the other guys. But you keep them ready, good batting practice and stuff like that. That's my opinion. I stand by that, and I believe in that.
It's an excellent philosophy. 57, there was a couple other players that came to the team. Hank Foyles, the catcher.
Yeah.
And Gene Baker, who was a utility infielder.
Well, see, I wasn't here in 59.
No, this is 57.
57? Yeah, Gene played third base. Mm-hmm. You know, and Foyles was a catcher. Foyles is a tough guy. He went over to the railing for a ball, hit his chin, and put a pretty good gash in his chin, and took him in the training room just like they do hockey players, sewed him up and back out to play again.
Okay, so in 58, you had an outstanding year.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
One of your best years that you had, and all so far you've just been a really solid, productive player.
Yeah.
And in 58, you had 35 home runs, 109 runs batted in, 281 average, and you were on the that was your third All-Star selection, and you were fourth place in the MVP voting that year.
The reason why I like that All-Star game because of the players voted you in. Wasn't done by the fans.
Was that the first year that they had brought the players voting?
Right.
Yeah.
That's why.
Was that one year they had all the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, they stuffed them out the ballot box. Okay. Well, it's a popularity contest. Okay.
Yeah.
But when the players vote, they're gonna vote for the player who's having a great year at that particular time, and they're honest when they do that, and that's why. Like I said, why I relish that particular year tremendously.
Who were the toughest pitchers that you faced?
Well, the toughest pitcher for me was Drysdale from the Dodgers. Okay, I struck out in my career, I think, 31 times against him. Okay.
Did he brush you back?
Oh, he had a wicked ball that would bore in on you. Okay. And if you're looking for it on the inside, then he throws you that sweeping curveball. Okay, and if you're not watching very well, and you know, you're starting to swing, and you half swing, and they call you out because you went too far. And I got my home runs off of him, you know. Gibson was tough, okay. I didn't have too much trouble with Koufax, okay.
Well, Koufax, he was still kind of wild then, right?
Yeah. Jim Hearn, he was tough. Magley was the type of pitcher. I mean, I hit home runs off Magley, you know, give you that little curveball and stuff like that. But Stu Miller, okay, you know, got blown off the mound. But Carl Erskine, he threw me 17 curveballs here in Pittsburgh, okay, at a game, and I fouled them all off. And he said, well, now I got him. I'm going to throw him a fastball. Hit it out of the ballpark. He came in the clubhouse after. He said, don't you look for him in a fastball? I said, that's all I look for. I can adjust to anything else. But if I'm looking for a curveball and you throw a fastball, I'm in a hospital. Okay? That's my theory. You know, and I've stuck to that theory. I try to tell kids to do the same thing. You look for a fastball on every pitch, adjust to anything else. Just watch the ball. I had great hands. I had great, great,
good wrist action.
Wrist and forearm, okay. I had an awkward way of hitting.
You're
you know,
a strong fella.
Guys like that hit the ball out of the ballpark. But I was strong. You know, not as strong now because of my age, but still, I still have some strength.
Conversely, then, who did you find to be some of the easiest pitchers that you usually had good luck with that didn't give you too
like
much
I said,
trouble?
Paul Miller was number one. And then the guy from Chicago, I forget what he was a relief pitcher. I mean, every time he came in, I hit a home run off him in relief. And
Jim Brewer?
No, not Jim. He was a relief pitcher. He started with a C, and I can't remember what his name was. You know, I used to know him just like that, but you know, I was at my age, 90.
I think your memory is fantastic.
Yeah,
this is great.
But it's not as great as it used to be, though, to be honest with you. But,
well, okay, so in 58, you know, this was there any in one thing in particular that when you knew you were having a good year, the whole team was having a good year?
Yeah.
The Pirates, this is the first team that you played on with the Pirates that they played over 500 that year.
Right.
They wound up in second place.
Right. We were two games behind Milwaukee. And they came to Pittsburgh and beat us 4 straight.
That and look at the team Milwaukee had. Warren Spahn and Lou Burdett and Joe Adcock and Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews.
Before you leave, I'm going to sell you a picture.
Okay, I'll buy.
It's a picture that I have when you talk about Milwaukee. We as a team, from the time baseball was invented in the 1800s until June 8, 1961, this feat has never been done in Major League Baseball. When I was with the Braves in 61, we as a team hit four home runs in succession in one inning by four different players. But getting back to that, you got it on?
Yes, it's very good.
Okay, we as a team hit four home runs in succession in one inning by four different players. Matthews hit the first one in the seventh inning in Cincinnati off pitcher Jim Maloney. Aaron hit the second one off Maloney. They changed pitchers, brought in Marshall Bridges to pitch Joe Acko, get the third one. I made baseball history by hitting the fourth one.
Off of Bridges?
Off of Bridges, yeah. Okay. I don't think this record will ever be broken. And I sell it for my two charities for $20. Okay. And my two charities are Camp Happy Days, Kids Kicking Cancer, and Courageous Kids, Safe Haven for Children.
As long as I can get a signature from you on it.
I have the picture out there. I'll show it to you.
Well, we'll do that later. So right. That's great. So now we're in 58, and you had also the three other players that came onto the team, Ted Kluszewski, Dick Stewart, and Dick Schofield.
Oh.
Any thoughts about those fellows?
Well, Schofield filled in pretty good because I think, I don't know whether Grote got hurt that year.
That was in 60.
He got hit in 60 out. But he filled in as a utility man, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think he played very much, okay. Mm-hmm. Kluszewski, he played sporadically. Stewart played pretty regular, okay. Getting back to Stewart, I remember the first year he came to spring training. He came over to my locker. He said, "You Frank Thomas?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "How many home runs you hit your first full year?" I said, 30. He said, "Well, I ought to hit 40. I said, "Well, I hope you make the ball club." but he was a great guy. I mean, I introduced him to a girl that became his wife. Okay, that she passed away, I think, and then he passed away also. But we were in spring training. The girl was there, and I said, "Why don't you?" Jasker to go out for a date.
Well, he was a good looking fellow.
Hell yeah, yeah. Strong. Well, you can bend your arm back, okay. He did that while ball players. Bet everybody. Yeah. Real strong.
Well, yeah. His nickname was Dr. Strangeglove.
Oh, yeah.
Was he really as bad a fielder as that?
Yeah. Somebody says that somebody better be behind him because to have a glove on.
Okay, so then in January of 59, we mentioned it before, but there was that blockbuster trade that really, it seemed like it gave the Pirates the missing pieces that they needed.
That's my claim to fame. I helped the Pirates win the pennant in 60.
Well, they basically got three guys for you. I mean, the other fellows were, in the trade, I know, but you were the main person that they were after.
But I was traded with a bad hand.
Now, what bad hand was it?
58, September 3rd. We're playing Cincinnati in Pittsburgh. Tom Acker hit me right here. Broke the bat. Bat went into my hand like that, okay? I should have ended my season then, but I wanted to, go on because I was fighting for the most valuable player and stuff like that. So I only hit three home runs from that time on. I had 32 at that time, and I only hit three more, so 35. When I had it operated on, you're going to laugh, gynecologist operated on my thumb.
That again?
You heard me right. The gynecologist operated on my thumb. He's a team doctor. Okay? I'm sitting in his office like him. He cut me right there. There's a scar. Okay? Cut things on. I said, what was in it? He said, little pieces of mice. I said, what do you mean mice? Little pieces of mice. Well, it never did heal. He traded me. Okay, and then when I went, that was before I went over to Europe. I went to Graduola. And then I came back, and that's when Gabe Call called me, and he said, want to sign you. And I said, well, you're getting damaged goods.
He told him.
I certainly did. And I said, maybe you want to send me to your doctor, okay, when I get there. But I'm telling you, you're getting damaged good. He says, I will see you in Cincinnati when you come back. I said, okay. So I went to Cincinnati, in his room, in his office, talked to him. And I says, here's my thumb. I says, it's not healed. And he said, well, we still want to sign you. I said, even though I'm got a bad hand. And I said, well, you know what I asked Pittsburgh for? Am I being unfair in what I'd asked for? And he says, no. He says, you had a great year. And he said, but you're going to have the same type of year if we're going to give you that kind of money. And I said, it never happened. I went from 35 home runs to 12. Okay, after the 59 season was over, Cubs were interested in me. So they traded for me, and they sent me to Dr. Compere, who used to operate here in Pittsburgh at Southside Hospital. After I got out of anesthesia, he says, I think there's going to be a lot of red faces. I had tumors going around my neck. Every time I picked up a bat, I had tears in my eyes. Freddie Hutchinson said,
my gosh, that had to be awful painful.
It was.
How did you even hit as well as you did?
I have no idea. I suffered with pain. And Freddie Hutchinson said, I know you're hurting. He said, but you're my type of ball player. I put you in the lineup. He never said you wanted out of the lineup. He says, and I feel for you. And that was it. Then I got traded after the 59 season to the Cubs.
So tell us a little bit about Fred Hutchinson, if you would.
Great manager. Great guy. Okay.
He died young.
Yeah. He would take the chairs in the clubhouse and throw them all over the place after the ballplayers left. He would be so mad if you lose a ball game. I beat them in a 14-inning ball game in New York. And I was on Ralph Kiner's show. And I saw all the ballplayers going after them, you know. And he was still in the clubhouse. And he says, you all better ought to be out of that clubhouse by the time I get there. And he walked slowly, slowly, slowly. But he was a great guy. He told it as it is. He didn't pull any punches. Okay. And you like playing for a guy like that. I mean, there isn't any manager that I played for that I didn't care to play for. I mean, I liked them all. I played for Dressen, okay. But, you know, I'm in the outfield, so I don't know half the things that goes on the bench and stuff like that. So, but I've enjoyed them all.
Now, for Cincinnati, what position were you playing for them?
Third base, outfield.
Okay. Now, some of the players on that team, you reunited you with some of the Pirates.
Perky,
Jerry Lynch, and Gus Bell.
Yeah, right.
Then some of the other players, do you have any thoughts of Frank Robinson, Veda Pinson, Johnny Temple?
Well, Temple was a great second baseman. Okay, great. He played like Grote did. Okay, knew where the ball was going to be pitched and where it was going to hit. I mean, very, very smart. A very smart baseball man. Frank Robinson, great hitter. Okay. I played with 15 Hall of Famers. And all great guys.